This conference is being recorded.
Okay, well, I'm back, and hopefully everyone is there as well. Does anybody else want to chime in and tell me that you're still alive?
Brian's still on.
Okay. Okay, great. Because it makes me feel better to know that I'm not talking to an empty space. So anyway, well, welcome. I'm glad you're all here, and this is the first of. Hello, who do I have?
This is Bill Roach.
Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
Great. Well, we're just starting. We are recording, and so what I would like to do is go ahead, and I'm going to give kind of a little presentation. This is very informal. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, you guys can interrupt me at any time. And it's more of a question and answer session than anything. So once again, welcome to the Rogue Investor Premium Member Service. And the focus of this service, and hopefully you've had time to kind of look at the website and look at the St. Joseph County, Indiana tax sale that we profiled. And what I want to do with this service is make it very practical. And this is just part of it. There's the other part is if you miss one of these calls, we are recording it. And if that doesn't work, then you're welcome to schedule a phone call with me. And again, if you have any questions, also you're welcome to schedule a phone call with me. So as part of this service, again, we're going to go over a different list every month, and I'm going to tackle kind of a different concept as well. And the first thing that I would like to do is just kind of as an introduction, just talk a little bit about what I normally do in a workshop is kind of just ask people kind of, why are they here? What's their motivation? And what drives you? What gets you up every morning? And that kind of goes back to psychology 101, which I always like to. That was my other love. I studied geology in college, and my second love was psychology. And so what I remember most about psychology is breaking it all down into two motivating factors, and one of those is seeking pleasure, and the other is avoiding pain. And I think that just kind of breaks it all down into almost the lowest common denominator. Why are we doing this? Why are we investing? Why pretty much everything you do? And I like to get back to that and see what my motivation is for everything. And what I think is really interesting is most of the time, and I've talked to several psychologists, I have one that's a Rogue Investor member who's a friend who actually came and spoke at one of my events at one point. And according to her, she says that avoiding pain, and I think I agree with this, is 5 times stronger than seeking pleasure. So although you may be thinking that a lot of what you're doing is for pleasure, it may actually be avoiding pain. And, whatever that pain may be, it may not be a physical pain, but it may be something that discomforts you in some way. So I just like to think about that. And the reason I say that is because I think it helps to get back to that before you sit down and write out some goals and some basically kind of your mission for what you're going to do with this thing that we're doing with this Rogue Investor Premium Member Service and with tax lien investing in general. So if you'd like to follow me, I don't know if you have access to the internet right now, and you can get on rogueinvestor.com/premium. Now, if you're already on there, then that's great. And I'll wait just a second here for anybody that wants to kind of log on. If you need the password, it's a password-protected site. I think my partner, Diane, should have sent that to you. And it's the login is Rogue Investor, and that's with a capital R and a capital I, all one word. And the second part of that is Money Talks. And once you're logged in, I think it tracks something and allows you not to log in again. And it may be after 24 hours you have to log in again. So if you're on that site, what I'd like to do is kind of scroll down just a little bit and show you each month what this is going to be about. Let's go back up to the very top. Highlighted at the very top is a direct link to the information, the actual special report each month. So you'll see it says March 1, 2010 special report on St. Joseph, Indiana tax sale. And also you'll see personal introduction. That section right there is going to be information each month on a specific topic. For this month, it's what you'll see is a PowerPoint presentation. If you've had time to download it, it talks about a little bit about motivating factors and a little bit about what real estate and tax liens are about, as far as being an investment and a business, and remembering to treat it that way. And in that PowerPoint presentation, and I think somewhere on the slide, you'll see a link to a one-page personalplan.pdf. Did everybody find that, or did you get a chance to download that by chance? Anyone want to yell out? I'm fine with that.
I did it.
You did it. Okay, great. It's basically just a personal business plan that's one page. And the reason it's one page is because I believe that goals and a business plan should be that simple. If it's more than one page, you know, in a normal size font too, let's not get tricky with that, then it's not worth it. So if you get a chance, I have filled this out for many of the things I've done, and I think you guys should go ahead and fill that out. If you want to send that to me, that's great, but you don't have to. But fill it out and sign it, and just stuff it in a drawer or keep it somewhere, and make it specific to this, to tax lien investing and to what we're doing here. And I think it'll be a way that will remind you to do this, and it will set some goals for you, and it will just be, you know, it's one thing to say you're going to do something, it's another to fill out even a one-page form and sign it and date it. I think that gives it credence, that gives it a stamp of approval, that makes it a little bit more serious. So that's what each month I will have a different topic. And some of the topics coming up, I'll just go ahead and tell you. One of them will be the three main government agencies, and we'll talk about that a little bit, that you need to be aware of as far as doing tax lien investing. Another one will be, we'll get into more of the definition of what a lien is and what a deed is. And by all means, I'll talk about this, no problem, now and whenever you talk to me. But I want to formalize this a little more so that you'll have this in this presentation format that you can look at any time. All right, so let's go back to that page that I just referred you to, rogueinvestor.com/premium. Just scroll down just a little bit. So we have our intro that I just referred you to. You should see a link that is the same link that's on top, which is where each one of these reports will be. Every time you'll see a call-in number. And then what we have are upcoming tax sales. So we're going to go ahead and keep that as up, as fresh as possible. We'll update that pretty much every week. And so there will be new sales on there, new online sales. Like you'll see March 4th, there's a bid for assets sale in Fresno County, California. Does everybody see that? Again, go ahead and yell out.
Yes, we do.
Okay, great. All right, so we will keep that updated and fresh so you can keep referring back to this page as far as finding some of these lists even quicker than, you know, searching out yourself. It's kind of strange, actually, just a side note on trying to find some of these lists. It's not the easiest thing to find. I mean, you know, we all love Google, and we Google this and we Google that, and you know, it's the greatest thing ever, except I'm telling you, sometimes finding tax lien lists and tax lien information just using Google or Yahoo or Bing, it's difficult unless you know exactly what you're searching for. You get all kinds of information, and most of which you don't necessarily need. So back to this, down where it says Tax Lien Research Center, you'll see that link for the one-page personal plan, and you will also see the latest first quarter update of our over-the-counter super list. And that's just a highlighted link that says first quarter 2010 update. We are about to update that. I believe it will be ready by Monday. So if you want to check back, that includes over 17 states of information on the over-the-counter list. Does everybody understand what over-the-counter means, just out of curiosity?
What does it mean?
Over-the-counter means... These are sales that have typically occurred once before, and for whatever reason, either the liens were not worthy of someone buying, or someone didn't come through with paying the money on the liens or the deeds, or there weren't enough buyers, which is becoming more and more of a reason, because, you know, people are holding onto their wallets as tight as possible, it seems like. And there are more liens and there are fewer investors out there doing this. And it's kind of ironic because the deals are the best that I've seen in a long time right now. But that kind of follows hand in hand with the whole foreclosure market. The foreclosures, mortgage foreclosures are great right now too. But, you know, there are fewer people doing it, seems like. So over-the-counter is a term that was that, you know, people used to literally go to the county and purchase the liens after the sale over the counter. And each state and each county has different terms for what they use. Some of them call them state-held liens, county-held liens, struck-off lists. There's a whole variety of terms that are used, and it's really dependent on each one of the counties. If you get a chance, there's a couple of teleseminars there that I recorded a while back on over-the-counter investing. They're MP3 files, so you should be able to play them on your computer, or if you're technically savvy enough, which I'm probably not, then you can actually play them on an iPod or other MP3 player. So this is the general list. And let's go ahead and let's get into the actual heart of the report. And that would be clicking on that report link. So if you go back up, follow me back up to where it says March 2010 special report. And we'll click on that link, the one that says rogueinvestor.com/premium-report-03-2010.html. And hopefully you've been through this once before, and you've looked at the the laws and kind of understand a little bit what's going on. So let's talk about Indiana just a little bit. Indiana has sales in the fall of each year, typically from August to October, sometimes even into November. And Indiana, the way their sales work, Indiana is a tax lien state. And just briefly before going a little bit further, let me say that about half of the states are tax lien states and about half are tax deed states. And if you live where I live, and Ann, did you say you're located here as well, right? I'm not sure if she's still on the call, but I live here in Kansas City, which is between two states, and I always like to use that as an example. On the Kansas side, that's a deed state, which means that when you're delinquent on your taxes, they send you notices, more notices, and typically even a few years go by before they will actually file their own lien and foreclose on a lien and go through this judicial foreclosure kind of a process, and they will sell that the deed or the ownership rights to the property at auction. And compare that to the other state, which is less than a mile from where I live, and that is Missouri. Missouri is a tax lien state, which means that if you're delinquent on your taxes, they're very quick about filing a lien, and then they sell that lien at an auction each year. In that state, it happens to be on a specific date in August. And so Indiana is a tax lien state, which means that you're actually buying debt on the property. You're not really buying ownership of the property until you foreclose on the lien that you purchase. So hopefully everybody understands that. I'll stop right here just real quick. Do you have any questions related to the difference between a lien and a deed?
I've got a question.
Sure.
If you wind up with buying the tax lien, okay?
Uh-huh.
The mortgage is still in place, right? You're not wiping the mortgage out, because why would a bank not? I mean, if the tax lien is $4,000 or $5,000 and the mortgage is like $200,000, why would a bank not pay the tax lien off?
Sure, that's a great question. And when you buy a tax lien, yes, there very well still could be a mortgage on the property, because you haven't gone through foreclosure yet. What happens is, let's go through a scenario in Indiana. Let's say we went to the regular Indiana sale in the fall in one of the counties. We would purchase a tax lien certificate, as it's known also, and there's what's called a redemption period. And in Indiana, it's very short, which makes it a great state. It's only 1 year. So that redemption period is the amount of time that the property owner has to pay off the taxes or otherwise risk losing the property. And so that's the simplest terms, but guess what? The mortgage company is also what's called an interested party in that property, or almost like another owner in the property, if you will. So let's run through the scenario. A few things can happen. I purchase a lien in Indiana, and 4 months later, the county sends me information saying that the lien has been redeemed, and your check will be coming. So you spent $1,000 in Indiana, you're going to earn 10%, so you've made $100 off your $1,000, so you get a check for $1,100, and that's one scenario. That's the kind of the easy scenario of what happens in getting your tax lien certificate redeemed. Another scenario could happen, and that is a whole year goes by and the tax lien is never redeemed. Well, what happens is at that point, you probably celebrate, because what you're going to do is foreclose on that property for just a fraction of what it's worth and take ownership. And you have to do
that.
How
often does that happen?
What I typically tell people is somewhere around 5% of the time, 3 to 5%. So, and that also depends on the type of property you're looking at. It's of course lower, as you can imagine, with a nicer property, and it's higher with a more beat up looking property. Let's say a rental property, or land. Or something that someone is, willing to give up in bad times. So, somewhere roughly in that percentage. So back to this whole scenario of the mortgage company. Before you can go through that foreclosure process, you have to notify the previous property owner or anyone with an interest in the property, which would be a mortgage company. So the mortgage company is notified, and they have to make a decision. Do they want to pay you off? Do they want to pay off the tax lien with interest? Or do they want to risk losing the property? Because a tax lien will supersede a mortgage. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's kind of how it all plays out. With the other states that are only tax deed states, that has already been done ahead of time. The county has already foreclosed, and they're selling the ownership rights to the property at auction.
Right.
So now what's interesting about Indiana is since about 2007, they now have these commissioner sales or B sales. They have some different names for it, and that's kind of what this is, that's profiled. And this particular sale only has a 120-day redemption period, because it's kind of similar to an over-the-counter property, except that what's happened here is that for whatever reason, these liens weren't purchased, or someone didn't go through the process of paying or whatever happened, and now the board of commissioners of that particular government agency, typically the county, has taken over ownership of the lien, and now they're selling it. And to entice us to buy, they've actually reduced the redemption period to 120 days. So do you guys have any questions about that? Let me go ahead and stop there. I just want to make sure that this is a little more informal than normal.
Mike, is this something you're going to walk us through when it happens?
Sure. Are you talking about after you purchase? Is that what you mean?
Well, the thing is, I mean, it seems to me that the over-the-counter or whatever, how much, documentation or information can we get on, to be able to make a logical decision?
Sure, yeah, and we'll
and that's, that, I'm in real estate. I've worked foreclosures, et cetera, mm-hmm. And, I mean, the thing about it is the property could sound good, could have a high appraisal, but if you never look at it and you're just buying it sight unseen, of course, again, if you're only buying the tax lien, you're pretty safe.
Yes, exactly. The if you're only buying a tax lien, you've reduced your risk considerably.
Risk is almost nil.
Mm-hmm. So that is one of the nice things about going the tax lien route.
Right.
As opposed to buying tax deeds, which of course you can buy online and do the same thing.
Right.
But you want to
better
see
them.
Yeah, but you want to make sure that you know what's going on. And there are ways around that as far as kind of doing this, as I say, from the comfort of your home. What I've I'll give you an example. Alabama is a state I like, and they have a really nice over-the-counter list.
Mm-hmm.
And I've bought there many times and had a realtor run out and look at the property, take pictures, and then either I've paid them a small fee in some cases, or in other cases I've promised to give them a listing when and if I sell it. And so that's something that can be done. It you know, requires a little bit of trust, of course, if you're going to do this, you know, without physically looking at the properties. The
right.
very best thing is always to look at a property. And the very best thing is, even with liens, if you're spending, you know, a significant amount of money on a lien, I recommend looking at it if at all possible. You know, it's one thing if you purchase a $500 lien or a $1,000 lien, but, you know, if you're starting to get up in the $10,000 range or you know, whatever your comfort factor is, then, you know, it's definitely worth it to look at it. It's not only worth it, it's a good idea. So,
right.
You know, I completely agree on that.
Mike, I'm out of Wisconsin, and Iowa kind of intrigues me because obviously it's a border state and 24%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're coming up in May or something like that.
Yes, they are. And, you know, I can – Iowa's a little bit complicated.
Because of the number thing, right?
Yeah, because I don't know if you're familiar with how they operate the sales. And
I read something from you on how they do that. You pick a number, and when your number comes up, you got a bid on that property.
That's correct. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Obviously, that may not be the property you've analyzed.
Yes. And most likely it's not, unless you
right.
analyze every single property. So
it makes it
a little more difficult. And you know, I'd be glad to you know talk to you some more about that.
No problem.
If you're thinking about going to an Iowa sale,
I am thinking about that or Florida.
Okay. Well, let's definitely talk before you go to we'll definitely be going through Florida.
Yep.
You know, because I typically go there every year, so you know, I'd be glad to. I will go over Florida in depth, and that, you know, Florida has a lot of online sales now, and so that's always a good thing to know. So yeah, let's talk before you go to especially the island, right. just so that you understand that.
All right, thank you.
Uh huh. So let's venture back just for a second on Indiana, and let me explain to you how the interest rate works in Indiana. The interest rate is actually on the actual minimum bid. It's 10% for the first 6 months, and that's a flat interest or a flat fee that is paid out. In other words, it's not annualized. And if it's after 6 months, if it's between 6 months and 12 months, it's 15%. And the overbid portion, that is annualized. And what do I mean by overbid? In Indiana, the way you bid is you bid the amount of the lien up. So if you start off with $1,000 owed on taxes, that's what the county wants. That's what's due. Then you're going to be bidding that amount up. So you're going to go to, you know, $1,100, $1,200. You're going to start going up. And that's the reason I say that is because this is done differently everywhere. In Florida, when we get to that state, the amount of the lien stays the same, and you bid the interest rate down. So, you know, you're starting at 18% interest, and you're bidding down, to, you know, all the way to zero if you want. But obviously that's not a good idea. And in Florida, actually what happens to be done a lot is that people bid it down to 0.25%, because there's a state law in Florida that guarantees you at least 5%. And I know that sounds strange, but that's part of the weird quirkiness of doing tax lien investing. So a lot of people will immediately bend down to a quarter. It's kind of funny when I used to go to sales there, you know, physical auctions, the ones that were really popular, you would just hear people immediately just yelling out quarter, 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 quarter. And that meant they wanted 0.25%. So, you know, if you read the laws, you would think that it would be some logical progression from 18 down to 17 to 16 to 50. No, what happens is the winner is the first person that gets the bid down to 0.25%. Or actually, if you bid to zero, you would win. But, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you bid to zero in Florida, you don't get that 5% guarantee. So back to Indiana. Here in Indiana, you're going to bid the amount of the lien up, and you are going to get interest on the overbid amount. And that's kind of important, because there are places when we talk about Colorado, which comes up in the fall as well, and they have some over-the-counter lists, and they have one of the problems with some of the places, some of the counties, they have about two or three systems they can use in Colorado, is that the overbid portion, you don't earn any interest. And in fact, in some of the counties, you don't even get that amount of the overbid back. So I just want to be clear, with Indiana, you are going to get the amount back plus interest if it's redeemed. And if it's not redeemed, then you, of course, want to make sure that you didn't overpay for that lien, that it's well worth the value of the property. So, in other words, let's start off again. Let's just pretend we're at a $1,000 lien. You bid, you've done your research, and the property looks good, and it's worth $100,000, just to make it easy. You're the winning bidder, let's say, at $10,000. Well, that's still a pretty good deal, even if it's not redeemed, because there's still $90,000 worth of play in there, if you follow me. So you'll spend some money in legal fees in order to foreclose on this. It's not that much, maybe a couple thousand dollars, and you'll take ownership. But
Mike, do you compete with other people? Is it an auction in the foreclosure process? Or if you win the tax lien certificate, do you get it in foreclosure? Like, I think in Illinois, if I read correctly, you get that property. Whereas I know in Florida, I could have hold a lien, but if it goes to foreclosure, if I bring it to foreclosure in that 2 to 7 year window, I'm competing against other people. So I may have to bid it up significantly.
Yes, and Florida is the only state that operates that way. So everywhere else, if you're the tax lien holder, your rights are guaranteed as long as you continue to pay taxes, what are called subsequent taxes, which I haven't really talked about yet, but Florida, no, it's different. In Florida, if you're the tax lien holder, you do have to take it to the tax deed sale. There's a whole separate tax deed sale where other people can bid against you. And then the downside for you is that if you lose, you get your money back plus interest. And so, but in every other state, Indiana included, if you're the tax lien holder and you maintain paying any subsequent taxes that are due, then it's you have first rights to foreclose on that property and take ownership. Does that make sense?
It does. And then the next question would be this overbid.
Yes.
Obviously, you don't, you know, the 10% you get for the overbid doesn't mean anything unless the owner of the property or the bank, which wants the property, say, is pays you, because there's I know in Florida, if you know, if someone else bids for the property, you get all your interest back. But in this case, it sounds like the only person really paying the interest would be the owner of the property, or if the bank holds it and just wants to control it. Is that correct?
If the bank wants to, you know, if the bank redeems, then they will have to pay you the same as if the property owner redeemed.
But those would be the only two people that are going to pay that interest, correct?
For the most part, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. I mean, there can be some weird issues where there's more than one owner, where you know, I mean, there's all kinds of weird things that can go on with real estate. So it can be anyone that has an interest in the property. There can be weird issues where a homeowners association, you know, there's a lot of outstanding dues, let's say, for a homeowners association, let's say several thousand dollars, but in the tax lien's only $1,000. It could be to the benefit of a homeowners association to pay off you with interest to maintain their rights in what's owed to them, if you follow me. And the difference being here is that any private liens are extinguished through the tax lien process, if you go through the foreclosure process as a tax lien holder. However, any government-type liens are not typically extinguished.
How about IRS liens, Mike?
IRS liens, no, they're not extinguished, but the IRS has a certain period of time to foreclose on its lien, and I believe it's 120 days. And if they don't, they lose their rights to do that as well.
If they foreclose on their liens, what does it do to you as a lien holder?
As a lien holder, they'll have to pay you back, and I believe it's with interest. But they have their own rules associated with that. I believe it's about 6% that they pay you back. There's actually – does everybody have the big, fat, green book, I call it, lovingly? There's actually a question and answer section in there. And there's a pretty good section on that very question, because you know, obviously that's an important thing to understand, is how the IRS and what they can do. But I think it looks like I'm looking it up here again, and it's question number 40, and that's page 65 of the tax sale book. If you have that, you don't have to look it up this second, obviously, but check that out, and there's also a good link, but it kind of goes through the answer to that, and it'll help you understand it a little bit better. So let's go a little bit further into this sale. If you kind of scroll through the statutes here, and this is all good information, and definitely you should look at that information. If you make it all the way down to where it says SRI online and St. Joseph County Board of Commissioners tax lien sale, does everybody see that on the website?
Yep.
Under step one, has everybody signed up for the auction already?
I haven't.
Okay, there's actually two things that this, and the way these online auctions, just let me step back for just one second. Obviously, before the internet, counties did this at public auction at the county courthouse, at the courthouse steps, wherever. And what has happened recently is that they've really got turned on to the internet auctions because of, you know, the amount of money that they can save. They don't have to rent out space. They don't have to have, you know, the sheriff come and the county's attorney come. This is all done online. So they're gradually, one county by one county across the U.S., I see this happening. And I'm positive every county will be doing this online. But in the process, there are different auction companies that are kind of vying for the rights to work with these counties. And SRI happens to be one of them, and it's obviously popular here in Indiana. Bid for Assets is another one. There's another one called Real Auction. And there, some of these are kind of concentrated a little more in certain areas. Some of the counties themselves have hired the programmers necessary to set up their own systems. So, unfortunately, it's not completely worked out so that, for example, if you learn how to do this SRI online auction system, you're good to go for every county in the United States. That's just not going to happen. But going through this and working with this one company, you'll kind of get the flavor of how they work with different variations. So with SRI online, you have to actually go to their website and sign up, get a username and password. And then once you do that, you need to actually go to really to a different link, and that's the second link that I have listed there, the SRI-taxsale.com. And that's where you'll find the list. And it's actually on that site, the SRI-taxsale.com, where you sign up with the county. And the reason that's done is because counties, the last thing on earth they want is for you to have outstanding taxes in their county and to be a tax sale investor, if you follow me. So they have to do a little approval process, and you probably already went through that. It seemed pretty seamless, but that's what they're doing. They're making sure that you don't have any outstanding issues with the county government, like you owe taxes or you have some judgment against you in that county or something to that effect. So if you were wondering about that, so if you're on that site, you'll see there's some different sales where it says announcements. If you go across, you'll see Switzerland, Vigo, Franklin, Clay, Jasper, and in there somewhere you'll see St. Joseph sale. Does everybody see that?
These are different counties?
Those are different counties. And I'm only profiling one of them. So after we're done, you know, you'll see. In fact, Switzerland sale, I think they just added that within the last day or two because I don't remember seeing that one. These are all sales coming up. Let me click on Switzerland. I'm trying to remember. That one is March 16th, the official sale date. And actually, let's look at that. That is a deed sale. So that's not a tax lien sale. That looks like a deed sale.
They do Marion online, do you know? Yes, Indianapolis is in Marion County.
Marion, I'm not sure if they're doing that yet or not. I'm not positive. Let me make a note. I'll find out what that looks like this year.
I emailed them today, actually. They never returned the email, but I called their number and they said it should be online, but I couldn't find it, but somewhere I saw Marion. I don't know where I saw it or what, but I know in Florida, you know, the some of the bigger counties like Palm Beach and I think Dade or South and Lyon, Broward, as of last year was not, but I was just curious with Indiana because it does, based on what you're saying and what I've read, what you've said, it looks like it is a good tax lien state.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll try to find out. I've got a note here.
That'd be great.
On that. And yes, as you can imagine, counties aren't the best at getting back with you. you get what you get with government. So, I mean, they're usually fairly friendly and everything, but, you know, they're getting hammered all the time with, you know, people wanting information. So they don't make any more money for answering 100 questions as, you know, answering one. So I will definitely find that out. So if you click on that St. Joseph County link, and I'm clicking on that now, and it says loading. So hopefully you're having a little better luck than I am.
Yeah, mine just loaded.
Actually, you know what, Michael? I can't even get onto the SRI Tax Sale website.
You can't right now?
Yeah.
Well, that's weird.
But everybody else can? Is that the deal?
Yeah. Did you click on the link, or did you type it in directly?
I typed it in directly.
Well, tell me what you typed in just to make sure that you have it correct.
www.sri-taxsale.com.
Yeah, that should be correct.
The only thing
I can think is it pulling up now?
No, I'm just going to I just deleted everything. I'm going to type it in again and keep hitting refresh until I get.
Yeah, you might try that, and of course, there's always the old standby, which is reboot your computer.
Okay. Well, I won't ask you to hang on then.
It could be a memory thing too with your computer.
Oh, okay. That rings a little true there. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So hopefully you can get on, and if you can't. You know, don't fret. We can talk on the phone and go through it.
Thank you.
Sure. So if you're looking at this list, does everybody else pretty much have that pulled up at this point?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm looking at this, and I see the actual tax sale list, but I only see page one, and it looks like it goes through 10 with three little dots, meaning there's probably more than 10 pages. So let's go through this quick. Well, not quickly, but let's talk about this. So we have some different ways that we can sort up here at the top, and one of those is by township, which, you know, for me, it doesn't mean a whole lot since I don't live in that county. I don't get a whole lot out of that. I get a little bit more out of the class, the second one that says select a class. If you click on that, it will show you agriculture, commercial, exempt, industrial, and residential. Let's go to residential. Click on that. And then go down to where that little search button is at and hit search. And I think I explained this on the web page, so hopefully I don't sound like I'm patronizing or anything, but I just want to make sure everybody understands it. So that'll pull up the list a little differently, and if you look under the column under where it says class, everything says residential. And the other thing that I had you do in the on the web page was click on the assessed value. So in that column header, if you go across, you see purchase, property ID, owner, address, class, assessed value, and minimum bid. Click on assessed value. If you got that to work, you should see the first one will be Williams Randall, and the assessed value is $100. Does everybody see that?
PMP.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
If you click on that one more time, it'll give you the range the other way. So it'll give you the most, that's giving you the cheapest assessed value first. And I just clicked on it again, and I'm going to look at the highest assessed value first. And that looks like it's showing me the owner's name is Carl Newborn.
Yep.
Everybody see that? Assessed value looks like $271,800, and the minimum bid is $2,275.
Yes.
So on this particular list, this is one way that you can start to kind of go through some screening. Now, I sometimes like to do this like I just did, kind of backwards like that, because typically those really, really cheap properties, those are going to be, properties of lesser value, almost always land or lots, or even in some cases, they might be an easement, or in some states, not so much in Indiana, but in some states, you'll even see mining rights, water rights, and other things that are actually taxed. And so what I have here is a nice kind of way to look at some of the better residential properties that probably have a house on them. And how are we going to find out if they have a house? What we're going to do is go over to the right-hand side. Let's look at that first one, that Carl Newborn. And if you go all the way over to where it says instructions and help, there's a link that says report. You click on that link.
Okay.
If you click on that link, you should see a report that comes up, and the first thing it says is parcel ID and tax type. Does everybody see that? Do you need a minute longer to get it to come through?
Yes, I see it.
Okay. This information is somewhat similar to what you would find with the county assessor's office. Not as in depth, but unfortunately with this particular county, the assessor information is not really online. So typically, and I think I mentioned this, I'm going to talk about this in another lesson, but let me go ahead and just tell you really the three most important county agencies that you're going to be looking up information. And one of them is, well, obviously the first one is the tax collector's office or the treasurer's office in some states. That's the taxing authority that this whole system is based upon. So that's number one. Number two is what I just alluded to, and that's the assessor's office or the appraisal office. Sometimes it's called the appraisal district. And that's where you're going to find information on what the county believes the property is worth and whether it has an improvement on it, which means a house, whether, how big the property is, and information like that. The third and final office that you're going to be looking up information is the recorder's office or the clerk's office. And that's where you're going to do research on whether there are other liens recorded, is there a mortgage, and that kind of information, all those recorded documents. So those are really what I believe are the three most important government offices or agencies that, that you know, you're going to deal with. So let's go through this just real quickly. If you look at the information, there's a few things I want to tell you. Parcel ID, that is the property's unique identifier. It's like the property's social security number. And the reason that's important is because if you get to a point where you actually need to call the county office, whether that's the assessor or the clerk or somebody, almost always they're going to want to know what the parcel ID is because that's the way they keep track of it. So that's an important thing to know. And a lot of systems, in fact, you'll just copy and paste that parcel ID number or you know, if you have to write it on a sheet of paper real quick and then get on another website, you're going to use that information in some other type of online system to find out what that property is all about. So let's look down and see a couple other things. What about the name? The name is Carl Newborn, and his address looks like 2119 Foxborough Court in Mishawaka, Indiana. And I guess what I'd like to know is this his property, or is this where he lives, or is this property somewhere else? So the way we know that is if you go down and you look at property address, everybody see that? 51621 Quincy Road in South Bend. So that's different from his mailing address. So that indicates to me that this property is a second home, a rental house, or something other than where he's physically living. Does that make sense to everybody? So why do I say that? Well, if you're looking for a higher potential for foreclosure on a property, there's a higher potential for a property where someone is not physically living, you know, like their homestead or the property that they own, versus a rental property or a vacation property or a second home. I mean, that's just how it is. If you think about, you know, if you come into hard times and you own three properties, you know, you own a vacation property and you own one rental house, let's say, guess which one you're going to lose first? You're probably going to lose the vacation home or the rental before you're going to lose the property that you live in. So I sometimes like to look at that in terms of foreclosure potential. Let's look also, another thing is whether it has a house on it or not. So if you go down, it says real improved, REALIMPROV. That's just how they, that indicates the real estate improvement. And it does have a house. Looks like they have it valued at $255,200. And where it says REALANDVA, real estate land value, they have that valued at about $32,800. So they typically, you know, they typically have those separated out. If you follow me, let's get out of this for just a second. And actually, instead of hitting the back button, the way this thing works is you have to actually just cancel out of the screen and go back to where we are at on the tax sale list. Does everybody follow me with that? So I'm back on the first screen before we clicked on that report.
Yep.
Okay. Just to show you the difference, I'm going to click on minimum bid, or no, sorry, I'm going to click on assessed value again to take it back to those cheaper properties, those $100 properties. come on now. I clicked on this, and so it's telling me it's loading. All right. Looks like it went through. And I have Randall Williams and Diane Williams, it looks like, at the top. And I'm going to go back to that same link where it says report. I'm going to click on report. And I'm going to look down at the real estate improvement, and it shows zero. Does everybody see that?
Yes.
Okay. What that means is there's no house on that property. Whenever it says whenever the improvement is zero or it has zero value, then that means that's a lot for the most part. And you can see the acreage is 0.19 acres at the bottom. So that's how you tell whether there's a house on it or not. Besides the fact that we can use the Google system and look it up as well. So if we could go back using that same link on the assessed value, I'm going to click on that one more time. And I'm going to go back to our friend Carl Newborn. And I am going to look at the map view on that. Does everybody see the link for maps?
Yes.
Yep.
Click on that. And once it goes through, you'll see up in the left-hand corner, it says select a map view, and then it has the address. You can use that pull-down menu, and you can experiment with these different views. But this is really pretty cool that they have all of these available just right there on the system. Usually, what you have to do is take that address and go into Google Earth or one of these other systems and either type it in or copy and paste it in and do that, which is not that big of a deal, but it's kind of, you know, one less step that you have to go through. What I think is pretty spectacular out of this is the Google Street View. If you click on that, does everybody have that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So it should pull up the address. And let's see. What do we have here? It's showing, looks like it even shows a sign, but I don't see the house there. Let's see if I can pan around. If you use the little arrows, you can pan around and look at got a picture. It looks like it's showing me just straight down the street. Let's see across here.
It's to the right, and there's a house.
Yeah, it looks like a little white farmhouse.
White, 51728 Quincy Road, if that's one.
51728. Yeah, that's what it looks like right there. So, yeah, and you can actually pan all the way around and look. Looks like there's a some farmland across the street. Let's check that with one of these other views. I'm going to go to Google Earth and see what that shows me. So I've clicked on Google Earth, and I'm going to hit the plus button so that it'll pan in.
Excuse me.
Okay, no problem. Well, I'm not real happy with where that's... I know Google Earth is usually off a little bit, but that's... where that's showing me is pretty far off. Let's... look at one more view and see what... Now, Google Maps won't do that, I know. Well, actually, I'm not... And this is all live, that I'm doing this particular one. I haven't looked at this one before. I'm not crazy about... Let's look at another... Let's look at one other. So let's get out of that and let's look at... the second one down, if everybody is following me still, let's look at this Thomas Brademus. If I were doing this research and it was the location was that far off from where the property is located, it shouldn't be that far off. So I would want some more confirmation that house is actually there and it's not just the land. Because I have had that happen before where even up until the day before the sale, on a website, you know, what they've shown is a property existing, you know, a house actually there. And then, you know, I've physically gone out and looked at a few places and they're not there anymore. So let's go to the second one and see what we have here. And I'm going to look under maps for that one as well. So I've got the map view up. I'm going to go down to the street view and see what we have. 1198 Hillcrest. Okay. Does everybody see that one? Just out of curiosity. I know it's a little hard to follow.
Which view is it you're looking at?
I was actually back on the Google Street View. This is 11, let's see. If I lost that. 1219 Hillcrest. 1219 Hillcrest, yes.
You see, what came up was what you had said, 1198 Hillcrest, even though you're looking for 1219. So maybe we have the bands of nine.
Yeah, let's see what we have here. Okay, let me see what we have in Google Earth on this one as well. All right. Hmm. it's not showing me a spectacular picture, but it is showing a house right where it should be as far as the address. Does that, do you see that on the Google Earth view?
Not yet.
Okay.
Mine says I need to download a Google Earth plugin, whatever that is.
Yeah, that, you may have to do that. I had to do that not too long ago. Well, it does, there is some confirmation that there's a house there. It's a little bit difficult to see. So it is good that they provide you with more than one thing to look at. So let's go back to the list, and let me also tell you that there's a way that you can export on that list. I think I mentioned it on the website. You see where it shows pipe delimited, CSV, Excel. Does everybody understand how to do that? Just out of curiosity?
No.
Well, if you click on that link, it should automatically download a file to your computer. And what it does with my computer is it puts it in the downloads file, but it may depend on how your computer is set up. And then if you have Excel or even a program similar to Excel, like I don't even know if Lotus is still around, but, you know, something to that effect, you should be able to load that into your computer, and you can look at the entire thing as one instead of looking at these pages individually. Does that make sense?
Okay, so if I just downloaded it via a text file version, would that give me the individual pages?
If you download the text file version, then you'll want to pull it into Excel, and it'll probably ask you a question like, see how it says pipe delimited? There's actually a, when you import it into Excel, there's actually it should divide it up based on those pipes or those little bars.
Okay.
And it should be able to pull it up into something that kind of looks similar to what you're looking at online with columns.
Okay.
And basically in a database format. And that's another thing that's kind of nice to do. And not every one of these tax sales will provide that for you. They have all kinds of different systems that they use. Some of them are even as unfriendly as PDF files. And when we get to that, I will show you that there's actually a way you can take a PDF file and pull it into Excel and do some sorts. But this is actually a really friendly system, even just doing it this way. So let's go back and let's talk about the actual purchase. Do you see off to the left-hand side of all of these that we're looking at, there's a purchase button?
Yep.
So let's take one of these. Let's take this Brademus guy, and let's hit the purchase button. Does everybody follow me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you're going to actually see where this is at. You see the parcel number off to the left. You see right now that the high bid is $3,618.69 by whoever this RON D55 is. And so in order to be the high bidder, you're going to do one of two things. You can literally bid in $1 increments, so you can bid another dollar higher than that to where it says the next bid, $36.19.69. Or you can do what's called proxy bidding. And the proxy bidding means that you can go through your research and you can determine that, hey, I'm willing to pay as much as, you know, $5,000 for this lien, knowing that I'm going to get interest and knowing that it's worth, let's see, what was it worth? Let's just go back real quick. Not sure I remember. Let's see, assessed value, $191,500. So you can actually set your bid in there through what's called proxy bidding. And I could put in, for example, right now, $5,000, and it would automatically bid to only $1 higher than the previous bidder, unless somebody else had already put in a proxy bid higher than that. Let me stop here just to make sure everybody understands that. Does that make sense?
Can you repeat it, Michael?
Sure. The way the programming works is that even if you put in a higher bid, it will bid in your favor so that you're not overpaying for the lien. So I'll give you one example. If I put in a bid for $5,000 right now and no other bidders had put anything in higher than $3,618.69, even though I put $5,000 in, the system would bid up one more dollar to win against whoever this RON D55 is. So the system would take me to $3,619.69, even though I put in $5,000. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's a good stopgap measure, huh?
The proxy bid is part of the program. You don't have to configure for proxy bid. It just happens.
It just happens, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a nice one of the nice things about doing this is that you don't have to sit by your computer 24 hours, you know, for the next 3 days, 21 hours and 43 minutes, according to what this thing says, and worry about, you know, bidding another dollar. And that same system they use, you know, I just got back from Arizona and actually did some online bidding in one of the counties in Arizona, and their system uses proxy bidding, except in Arizona is very much like similar to Florida, and so it's a bid the interest rate down state. So the same thing happens there. You know, you start off in Arizona, you start off at 16%, and I'll give you an example. I bid on a lien. I said I was willing to go down to, I'm trying to remember, I think 6 or 7%. And on that particular lien that I'm thinking of, I won the bid at 14%, even though I said 6%. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was a nice surprise in Florida. I didn't realize they did it like that. And I saw I had a couple were higher than what I was willing to accept.
Oh, on the one you did, so they didn't have it automatically programmed for doing it that way? Is that what you're saying?
No, it was automatic. So in other words, if in the online auction, there was, I put in 8%, and the lowest bid ahead of me, the bid down was at 16%, they would have awarded me at like 15.5%. So it's even if I was willing to take less, if nobody bid down to where I was, I believe the Florida situation will just bring you right up to you know, a half a point, half a percent underneath whoever was bidding down.
Okay. Yeah. That's somewhat similar to what I'm talking about. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, so let's look at one thing that is confusing about this, that this particular SRI system that I don't like, is that I want to see like all of the bids at one time. So let me show you how to do that. Because see, we're just looking at one, so I'm going to get out of this screen. And we were doing our research on SRI-taxsale.com. If you actually go to, and let me, let's see here. I want to make sure I get this. I'm going to go back to my website just so that I make sure I get the website link correct. So I'm going to go back to rogueinvestor.com/premium, which I can, my feeble mind can remember. I'm going to click on this report link again. I'm going to go down, and I'm going to find the other link. Yes, it's so the main one that you first signed up for is sri-onlineauctions.com. But everybody go to that. And you may have to log in. I thought it would allow me not to log in, but it looks like it's making me log in again. So if I can remember my login, which is, of course, a challenge nowadays. Whoops, your login attempt was unsuccessful. Okay, let me try this one more time. Is everybody at sri-onlineauctions.com?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me try another. Hold on just one second. Let me get into SRI hyphen. No, onlineauctions.com. I apologize. I'm having the backup computer get into this so that. Okay, go ahead and log in. Okay, does everybody see the list? After you've logged in?
No, I logged in, but I just see tax sales, SRI Sheriff Sales Services, and about our company.
That's all I see, too, is those three things. After logging into SRIOnlineAuctions.com.
So would we click go to tax sales?
You should just be able to log in where it says member login and password.
It shows me as logged in, but that's, I get the same, those three categories, tax sales, SRI sheriff sales, about our company. But on the lower left of the screen, there's a thing that says two tax sales, which maybe if we click that on, we'll get to where you are.
Okay. Yeah, try that and see if it gets you any closer. And then.
Oh yeah, and then it's there's another link when you go to that screen that says go to tax sale auctions. Could that be the screen we want to go to?
Yes, try that.
Oh. Yeah, now it gives a list of, it says there are no current auctions listed. Please visit later.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
collection page. That's what I'd gone into. Remember, I was asking about Marion. They have a thing that Marion is completed auction archive, and one of the things is Marion test, whatever that is. Maybe it's a test auction.
It's probably a test auction. Yeah, this has given me a little bit of fits too, and I was just on it for a couple hours today looking. I'm not quite sure why this isn't pulling up unless it's down right now. It really, all it is the same thing as on SRI-TaxSale.com where we were in and we clicked on the purchase button.
Yeah, that's not what's showing at all. St. Joseph's isn't even here.
This looks like just a few test auctions. Maybe it's a tutorial or something.
Okay, it looks like we have it. Looks like I have it back up here. And nobody else has this at this point. Is that right?
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Huh, okay. All right, well, rather than what I'll do is I'll send everyone an email with instructions on how to do this. And just let me tell you, it's the same thing as when we clicked on the purchase link, except it shows you the status of all of the bids that are going on. So you can actually, and what I wanted to show you is that you can actually click a track. You can either go ahead and bid, and it will allow you to follow your bid, or it will track the bid for you. Rather than get bogged down in the technology part of it, which is always a challenge, I'll just go ahead and send you the instructions. Hey. Yes?
Hello. I'm sorry.
Are we going to go through a live auction with you?
I'm sorry.
Are we going to go through a live auction with you? In other words, you're going to be, on the same site.
What I'm doing is that's what we're doing right now. I mean, as far as this particular.
I mean, when it's actually going on, though.
Well, this particular auction is live. I mean, as far as doing the bidding, and it will be closed in 3 days.
All right.
So this is the way they do this system. It's not so much like all of a sudden it's live. Do you follow me?
Kind of.
So what I was trying to get you to was the final screen here that actually shows you where the bids are at. So, for example, I'm looking at the screen right now, and I apologize that, I just tested this out this afternoon, and what you do is you get on that link I told you, sri-auctionsonline.com, and enter your username and password. And it should get you in, but nevertheless, I'll send you some instructions on this again and make sure that they don't have some kind of glitch. But I'm looking at the screen right now, and it shows me the parcels off to the side. It shows, I'm looking at 71001-1042-1080, which is one of the parcels, and it's showing me right now the high bid, $301, next bid, $302, and it shows me off to the side, kind of like I was showing you before, that the person's screen name who has the bid at this point. And then the other column is the actual bid or whether you want to track the bid. So it's identical to the other screen where you hit the purchase And in fact, let's go back to that just so that I can show you. So if you're...
Michael, can I interrupt a second, please?
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, Michael, I'm sorry. My name is Randy Surratt, and I've had one of those weird, bad days. I've had car trouble. And
Came
on to call about a minute ago just to apologize for not getting in to the conference this evening. And I guess if you wouldn't mind, I'll try and arrange a personal get-together with you to make up for this.
Sure, no problem. I understand. Life happens.
It's been one of those weird days. I won't bore you with all the details, but it's been interesting. So I wanted to apologize for being rude and not at least let you know I wasn't coming online, but I've been fighting a broken-down car and a bunch of different stuff. So.
Oh, well, sorry to hear that. Yeah, no problem. Just feel free to set up a time, and that goes for everybody. Feel free to set up a time. If you can't get on that one screen, then we'll personally take you through to get on that one screen.
I'm going to go ahead and sign out, Michael. I just want to let you know that I appreciate what you're doing, and I'll be in touch.
Okay, sounds great. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye.
So if we could just go back just real quick. I know we're kind of running out of time, and I understand everybody has a life outside of doing online investing. But let's go back to sri-taxsale.com and get back, or if you already have the screen open, get back to the St. Joseph screen where we were looking at doing our screening, and the purchase link was off to the side.
Okay.
Is everybody there?
Yep. St. Joseph sale?
Yes. So I'm going back in. I'm going to go back and hit residential and do a search. And then I'm going to hit assessed value again, like we just did, $100. And I'm going to go backwards and hit it again. And get back to this Thomas Brooks Brademus Jr. or something to that effect. And the purchase button's off to the left-hand side. So if you click on one of those, and you'll see where it says, what I was talking about earlier, where it says high bid, $3,618.69. The screen that I was trying to get you to will show all of the properties just like this, where it shows Thomas Brademus's property, this parcel number 7101851364883. That's what I want to get you back to. So for whatever reason, I'm not sure why that's not allowing you to get in, but that's the other link, and they make it a little difficult to see all of this at once, but it sure is nice if you can pull them all up at one time, and you have to do that on the other website. So I will make a note to have some instructions sent on that. So since we're running out of time right now, again, I don't want you to feel like, oh, my God, this is it, and I didn't understand everything. I didn't get everything answered. I'd like to answer some more questions right now. And if you have more, please feel free to ask them. Does everybody have my email address, by the way? I think I put that somewhere on the website. Does everybody have that?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that dino@rogueinvestor.com?
Sure. Yes, that's Diane's, my business partner.
Okay.
You can send it there, and she'll get it to me, or you can send it directly to michael@rogueinvestor.com.
So, Michael, just a question for you. Based upon what you found out about this Thomas Brooks person, would you bid on this?
So far I think this is worthy of consideration. One other thing I would look at is the county records to see what's going on.
Okay.
if you go back to the rogueinvestor.com, that premium link.
Yep.
Let me see if I am still in it. I'm not positive if I am or not. There, you'll see a link to the county recorder's site. Let's see here. I'm going to go back, rogueinvestor.com, premium. Whoops. No.
Okay, yeah, it's a huge address.
Yeah, do you see the link for...
Yeah, for the county...
For the recorder's office?
Yeah. Okay, so you need to put in the name of the individual, and then if you do that and nothing pops up, then you're one step closer to eliminating any doubt, I would...
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, you said it very well, actually. Maybe you should... I'm going to let you give the next presentation. That was perfect.
Okay, and so just according to the information that you provided us, you just keep eliminating doubt by due diligence and head on to environmental problems at EPA.gov.
You do. And so, yeah, let me get back to that just real quickly. So you would go through... Kind of like we did, we went through some of these searches. We looked at what the values of these properties are. We looked up the properties to see what they look like, at least on Google Earth. We can't, you know, we're not standing there physically looking at them. And, you know, and you screen by, we screened some of those out based on the price. You know, we kind of got rid of some of those lots versus some of the houses. And again, some of that also depends on what you want out of this. Some people actually like to buy land, and other people say, no way, I'll never buy a lien on land. So it just depends. Some people won't mess with commercial properties. Commercial properties have a little more risk. Definitely, if you're looking at commercial properties, consider the environmental implications of that, and that's where you would want to do a little more of the, you know, go to that epa.gov/enviro, that link, see if there are any issues related to, you know, for example, hazardous waste or any generators or transporters or disposers nearby. You know, some industrial areas and, well, even some residential areas are in flood zones. That's always a good thing to check. But what I want you to understand is that this is after you get your list down to something manageable. And that also depends on how much you're going to be spending. So, you know, if you're only planning on buying 5 liens, then this is easy. If you're planning on buying 20 or 30 or 40, that's a different story. You know, you might want to start with your most expensive liens, and go from there. Make sure that, you know, you do more research on what you're spending more money on. That kind of only makes sense, right? So basically, the first step is to screen, come up with your smaller list, and then go to the county recorder's office, look up some of that information, see what pulls up. When you go to the county recorder's office, you're not going to search by parcel ID. You're going to actually search by the name. And I think I mentioned that, but I want everybody to understand. That's just the way the system is here. It's called the Grantor-Grantee Index, and that's the way counties have done it for years, is that they record deeds and mortgages and documents, liens, based on either a grantor. Grantor is a fancy word for saying somebody that's giving something to somebody else, and then a grantee is somebody that's receiving something. Where it gets a little confusing is that, like, if I sell a property to you, I'm a grantor. And if you buy the property, you're a grantee. And that makes sense. That's really easy. But if it's a mortgage, it's the opposite. So if I actually take out a mortgage with a company, I'm the mortgagor. Whereas it seems like it should be the opposite, and I know that kind of doesn't make sense. So what everybody recommends and you should always do is search if there's a grantor index and a grantee index, search both. Most systems will have it so that you can say, I want to search both and see what pulls up. So you'll see deeds, you'll see liens, you'll see releases of liens, you'll see all kinds of stuff, but they'll all be based on the name, which is the person's name. If there's more than one person, definitely search both people that are listed on the property. If it's under a trust name, search the trust name. I did one of these the other day, and I was certain it was a trust, I believe. And actually, when I looked up the trust, I could tell where this person had probably put his or I think it was her. Yeah, this was a woman that put her interest in a property in a trust. And so then what I did was I searched under her name to see if there were any issues specifically under her name, even though the property now showed it was under the trust. If you follow me, you don't always have to go to that. That's a little bit, going maybe a little bit further than you need to, but it's certainly, if you're spending a little bit of money, then you like to have as much protection as possible.
Right. Better safe than sorry. Michael, could you speak to under step 7 and the purchase? Can you speak a bit to your philosophy as to you stated you personally don't bid over 50% of the value? Can you
Yes.
speak to
it? Well, I mean, I want to make sure that I get a good deal, and that's a little bit of a general term that kind of applies to not only this type of tax lien investing, but it also applies to tax deed investing, which I do as well. And what you definitely don't want to do is overspend for something. So, for example, if you go through this, and you buy these tax liens, some are redeemed, but then you end up with one that's not redeemed. And you go, wow, okay, so now I got to go through the foreclosure process. You certainly want to make sure that what you paid for it is a good deal. And especially nowadays, I think you want an incredible deal. So, 50% is on the high end. I would say much lower than that at this point, and I think I mentioned that somewhere. I don't have it quite in front of me, but Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it will depend a little bit on following the bidding process and seeing where it kind of ends up. And certainly, I would recommend on the last day, I believe the bidding ends at 8:00 on Monday. So certainly, you have time to go through this process. You can place your bids now. Remember, it's proxy bidding, but you can also check back on Monday and kind of follow it a little bit closer. And that's what a lot of these systems do. Like the one I just did in Arizona, you could place your bids ahead of time, but the true bidding process didn't start until a particular day. This one is a little different in that you actually are putting in your proxy bid, and it's showing you what people are bidding right now. So it's in a way it's live right now.
It's really like eBay.
It's very much like that. It's very much like that. So it's weird, actually, if you think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're actually bidding on debt on a property that could, in fact, if you don't earn interest, could be purchasing that property. So you should always think of it in terms of, if I got that property, would I be happy? If I spent $1,000 and it was a $100,000 property, I would be pretty darn happy. But in the heyday of real estate, we can't imagine it right now. But I don't. If you recall, 2005, 2006. Some of these systems were alive at that point, and people were paying close to retail, especially at deed sales and in places like California. I mean, they were bidding things all the way up to retail value. So if it was a $100,000 property, which that wouldn't happen in California. Let's say it was a $400,000 property. There were people bidding these, even on these online systems, all the way up to $350 to $400. And, they were crazy for doing that because, they're not really physically looking at the property. And even with deed sales, you can go do a drive-by, but you can't literally walk inside of the properties because at the point right before the sale, it's not, there's not a realtor listing the property, and you can't go inside and look at the basement and check in the attic and do anything like that. So, and the other thing is you're getting what's called a tax deed, and there's other names for it. And I'm going to go through this a little bit just so you understand probably, next time or the time after. But there are different kinds of levels of deeds.
What are we looking at? Excuse me.
Sorry, go ahead.
Wait, this is Bill from Wisconsin. I'm running late on something else. I've got to make another call.
When are we
going to do another conference call?
We'll put it on the website. We're going to have another conference call next month. In the meantime, if you guys have questions, send me an email or set up a time to talk with me personally.
Is this number the 931-381-4520 number to get a hold of you at?
Yes, 913-381-4520.
Okay. Thank you for, it was great. Thank you.
Sure. Great. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess at this point maybe we'll continue on for another few minutes. Does anybody still have any questions? I'll still keep going.
Yeah, this is Brian. Just a quick question. Do you recommend having your LLCs in place before you start bidding?
That's a really good question. It's a good idea, but at the same time, it's certainly always a good idea to have a level of protection in place anytime you're doing any type of real estate. So my answer is yes, but I would caveat that with saying that don't let it stop you from doing this, because people have been doing tax lien investing for years and years before LLCs and Chapter C's and S's and all these things were popular. So it can be done, and it is done all the time. People just do it through their own name. But certainly you will have, another level of protection if you set up an LLC and get an employer identification number, because then you can sign up on these systems, through your company and through that employer ID number instead of your own Social Security number.
Would that be more for tax deeds than for tax liens, if if I'm just interested in the interest accrual on tax liens on good properties that are unlikely to go to foreclosure.
Yeah, well, certainly, kind of like we talked about with liens, there's less risks than deeds. I think it's not a bad idea for nowadays, as cheap as it is to set up, for example, an LLC, and as easy as it is to do this process, it's not a bad idea to have that in place. But I certainly don't want that, to stop you from doing this, or to slow you down in any way. I mean, it's just like it's kind of an extra protection, I would say, with liens. With deeds, I would say it's a little more important.
Okay. The other question I had is a little off the subject, but I know you referred to putting these things in a self-directed IRA. Can you do these in self-directed Roth IRAs?
Yes.
Or it's the traditional?
Uh-huh. You can do them in both.
Okay, great.
Yep. I mean, if that's, and we might talk about that. In fact, I think I will at some point. But if you want to talk about that, offline, no problem. I mean, I think we talked about that the other day about self-directed IRA.
Yeah, I realize Roth. We have this opportunity to shift over to Roths now, and anyhow, that's for another day. And I'm not sure I'm going to do it. I just wanted to be sure I had that potential of interest.
Yes, absolutely. You can do that. You can even use a self-directed 401k, which I can talk about. If you set up your own company, you can do what's called a solo or an individual 401k, and you can self-direct those, and you can do this type of investing that way as well.
Michael?
Thank you for everything today. It was very informative.
Sure, no problem. All right. Have a good evening.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sorry.
I had a question. This is Ann. I'm on my old computer, so I wasn't able to do some of the sorts you were doing. So I was looking at a different parcel, and that's St. Joseph Parcels.
Okay.
I pulled up one that it had a dollar amount in that real improvement thing, but the land value was higher.
The land value was higher than the improvement value?
Uh-huh.
That probably means that it did you look at a picture? Were you able to pull up a picture?
I couldn't get the maps to work.
See if you can do that. It's that would indicate to me that it might be a kind of a junky house, like a rental house or something.
Okay. Yeah, it had a different address from the owner was a different address than the property. So.
That's typically what I would think. Okay. If you have like let's say the property value is 30,000 or 40,000, and it says the house value is only 18,000 or 20,000. I've seen things like that many times.
Yeah. Okay.
And and having said that, at the same time, those are sometimes better opportunities in terms of if you're going after like potential for foreclosure on that.
Mm-hmm.
That can be something interesting.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, I guess what I would say is that this is kind of not the end; it's the beginning. So, if you have questions, this weekend, send me an email. I will be in on Monday. If you have questions, I'm in tomorrow as well. So start looking through the list and see what you come up with, and send me your questions or set up a time to talk.
Okay, great, Michael. Hey, thanks a lot.
Sure, you bet. Everybody, have a good evening, and we'll talk next month if I don't hear you sooner than that.
Thank you. This is great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.